This is the Actual Fluency Podcast, helping you become a better language learner by providing motivating weekly inspiration, as well as top tips and tricks from expert guests. And now, your host, Chris Broholm.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Actual Fluency Podcast. Today I'm very excited to welcome onto the show a guest who's probably best introduced by his alias and not his real name, which is a first for the show. I have the special Evil Deer on, also known as Richard Delamore, and he's famous for his YouTube channel as well as other things. And he's very active with the Esperanto community, having fun at the Esperanto TV channel. And other than that, you do about 117 other things. But welcome to the show.
Thanks, man. It's always been weird hearing Evil Deer.
Oh, what? Is there a different pronunciation?
No. It's weird because, like, I only ever hear it online in written form. So I've never actually heard anyone call me Evil Deer.
Oh, there you go. There you go. Well, I thought I just butchered it because that's kind of a theme on the show. People come on with, like, foreign names and then I just butcher them completely, so I thought that was the case, but
no, that's fine.
Right, cool. Well, for people who don't know you, can you give a little backstory on how you got so involved with the Esperanto that eventually you founded a TV channel for Esperanto and started doing, I mean, you almost do daily videos now, or at least, you know, a few a week?
Well, yeah, it's I guess that's a hard one where to start. I kind of stumbled across Esperanto through Wikipedia. I was at work one day being productive, reading Wikipedia. and I was, I don't know how, you know how it is with Wikipedia. You read one thing, click on a link, next thing you go, you're in the weird section of Wikipedia. It's kind of like YouTube in that sense. And I stumbled across an article about international languages. When I first saw the word Esperanto, I actually thought it was Spanish. I thought it was Espanol. So I kind of ignored it. But I later came back for some reason, and when I read the article about the history of Esperanto, it's created, the fact that it's got native speakers, that kind of like got me interested, because I was like, well, I always wanted to learn another language, and I'd failed at multiple languages. And in this article, it said it was the easiest language in the world to learn. And I thought, you know, if I can't learn that language, then I should definitely give up. And that's kind of just how it all rolled ahead, you know, over time, started doing lessons in it online. Everything was pretty much online. After 3 months, had my first meetup, kind of then got roped into the local associations and then roped into Esperanto TV. And then I didn't get roped into my YouTube channel. That was something I willingly did. So yeah. And I release a video every day now. So
that's crazy. I mean, as a content producer, I know how much work goes into it. I know some of you, you know, turn on the camera and you have some kind of rant on something or talking about what's going on. So it's not, in terms of production, it's not the most requiring, but putting it out every day is, I mean, how do you balance that with a real life on the side?
Well, it's hard because I work full time, like most content creators. Sometimes I'll have, like during the day, I'll just take notes of possible ideas for a video coming up. So I've got a bunch of notes, but every now and then, I'll get to my filming time, which is about 10 at night, because I usually spend the first few hours just messing around, looking up stuff in the community, trying to get like more ideas. Sometimes I'll have like a great idea, boom, straight in, do it. You know, it takes about an hour to make the video, edit it, upload it, and then head off to bed. But sometimes I'll literally sit there at 1 a.m. going, oh my God, I can't think of anything.
Yeah, I definitely relate to that.
Yeah, all over the shop.
Awesome. And Esperanto has seen a bit of an increase in popularity recently with the Duolingo course making it widely available, and suddenly people from all over the world are hearing about it, and hundreds of thousands of people, new learners, have signed up. How much of a boost did you see when that course came out?
Oh, it's insane, the change that I've seen. When I started learning Esperanto, I started back in 2010, somewhere around there. And at the time when I learned it through this website called Learning. And I pretty much just learned it all self-study. Then I went to local groups, and literally for 3 years, just the same people always at those groups. You know everyone in the Esperanto community. It's so small. And then I actually launched my channel, I think, like 2 months before Duolingo launched the Esperanto course. And I got people sign up. But then when Duolingo launched, my subscriptions just went straight up. And I was like, whoa. And suddenly I'm meeting all these new Esperantists. There's at least five extra ones that I've just bumped into around Sydney. People are just like suddenly knowing what it is now, which is, it's just crazy, the change. And now that they've just started working on these Spanish to Esperanto courses, I can only imagine it's going to get more hectic.
Hey, it's crazy. When you think of Esperanto, you think of, you know, almost the other way around, right? You're like, it's kind of stagnated, you know, it's kind of doing its thing. And if you look at the every year, the Congreso, the yearly Congress in around the world, you can see that the numbers kind of, they had a peak, I think, about 10 years ago or something. Don't quote me on that. And then it sort of stagnated, sort of declined a little bit. But then you see this Duolingo, and it's bringing in a whole new generation. And I guess in a way, that's what Esperanto needed, a fresh boost, because it had this kind of a stigma of being mostly old people, you know. So getting lots of fresh blood in, it must be a good thing.
Well, the crazy thing about Duolingo, which is something I think it done, which no other Esperanto course did before, is every other Esperanto course tried to sell Esperanto as an idea to people, and then they'd hear created language, they'd hear no country, no culture, even though the culture aspect is actually false, but they'd hear all this no, no, no. When with Duolingo, people just see this language and they go, oh, that looks interesting. They add it, they start learning it. Then they're like, why is this so easy? Then they go look up the history of it, and then it's already too late. They're hooked. They've found a language that they can actually learn. And the great thing is Duolingo has so many learners already. They just randomly add these courses, and just Esperanto just spiked as a result of that. And like you were saying, the congresses were dying down in numbers. Most people were just using it online. And it's going to be really interesting to see the next Congress, how that goes, because I've heard of smaller Congresses, because there's lots of them that happen. I've heard of a few smaller ones where Duolingo learners have just started rocking up, which was totally unexpected. And having full conversations in Esperanto, and people are just like, okay, something crazy is happening here.
Yeah, we're at the middle of a renaissance, I guess you can call it, and it's very interesting. But I guess we should maybe step back one step, because there are lots of people listening out there who maybe they haven't heard so much about Esperanto. They haven't maybe listened to the previous episode I did on Esperanto. I talked to Chuck Smith, for example, about Esperanto on a few occasions. And I just noticed I keep saying the word Esperanto. Is that some kind of magic trick where it starts lodged in your brain and you just... when you sleep, you're Esperanto. Esperanto.
I don't know about that, but
But anyway,
I honestly don't know where to take that one.
There are lots of options, but anyway, the idea that I wanted to get to is, some people have no idea, honestly, what Esperanto is and you know what it does and what you can do with it. So. Just, you know, I know you've probably been asked this a million times, but what are some of the reasons that people should consider learning Esperanto?
Okay, well, I can give you a lot of reasons, but I'll probably just give you ones based on my own experiences. For one, a lot of people want to learn a foreign language for various reasons. Me, because I wanted to feel cultured, because everyone here speaks English. But I wanted to learn a foreign language, and I'd studied Japanese at school. I'd studied French in my own time. And I am like most people. I'm just really bad at languages. And Esperanto, because of its ease, because for those who don't know, Esperanto is a created language. It's designed to be as easy to learn as possible while also being precise enough to use in an international context. Because of its ease of learning, you feel that, hang on, maybe it's not me that's bad at languages. Maybe I just didn't know how to learn languages previously. And that's one of the benefits, because you come out of it speaking a foreign language, which other people actually speak. There's a lot of Esperanto speakers. You can use it in nearly every context. But you also come out of it with this whole idea that, okay, so I can learn a language. And then you... pretty much what happens with every Esperanto speaker, they get the language bug. I'm studying Chinese now, I'm studying Spanish. It's like a natural result, it's a natural just way of going forward. And it's funny, because I think that's why all these language companies are now picking up on Esperanto, because they're like, hey, Esperanto is already interested in languages. Let's go for them. That's why you'll see Esperanto, Duolingo, iTalki, and all these other companies that have just launched Esperanto courses or aspects for Esperanto. So that's one thing. The second thing is, it has a very fascinating culture of its own. Now, a lot of people say, well, it's a created language. How can it have a culture? But I consider Esperanto like a, it's kind of like a international mix mash of random cultures all into one, with its own little flavor of internationalism thrown on top type of thing. So you get all these different things, like there's like famous poets, William Old, who was nominated for the Nobel Prize in Literature. There's many different there's so many different like works that have been written in Esperanto. There's films, bad films, good films, music, and there's you gain access to the entire world through it, but it also has its own flavor. Like when you think about it, how many languages have been born out of an ideal rather than a historical setting like a country or something like that? So it's completely different to any other language. And it's just, yeah, it's just that, I'd say the culture of it is very unique. There's also other aspects where Esperanto has embedded itself into other groups, like certain religions and stuff like that. And you just learn about all these things around the world. So yeah, you've got the ease of use, you've got the culture behind it. You've also got the fact that Esperanto is really like a language of, it sounds kind of lame or cliche, but it's a language of friendship. Because you willingly go out and learn this language, and then in order to use it, you have to make friends. And that's pretty much how it is. And then the great thing is, every Esperanto speaker, thank God, trusts one another. We haven't had any murders yet, luckily. So we all trust one another, which means that you can stay with other Esperantists. Like this one time I went to Switzerland, I just randomly shot an email off to the local Swiss group going, hey, is there anywhere I can stay, because I'm too cheap to pay for accommodation? And they sent that out on their newsletter. Next thing I know, I'm being put up in this Swiss house. We've got a top floor for ourselves. They're giving us like breakfast, lunch and dinner type of thing made. And it's just like, they treat us as if we're kids. They came in, you know, like their own personal kids. And it's that type of unique culture where everyone is, we're all in this together type of thing, which is very unique to Esperanto. Like if I just shot a random email off to someone in Britain and said, hey, can I crash at your place? I'm pretty sure he wouldn't respond in a good way. So yeah, there's many different reasons why you might want to learn it. And those are the main ones for me.
Cool. Yeah, I've experienced the same. I mean, I'm not as well versed in the Esperanto community, but the times that I have engaged with people, even learners of Esperanto at a very young, early stage, they seem to embrace this kind of everyone's a friend, and it's just a very nice thing to be part of. So I definitely agree, and it's a bridge as well. Often, like that's also a cool aspect. Mm-hmm. I find that I was in Berlin, for instance, and there was a Portuguese couple, and I didn't speak Portuguese, and they spoke barely any English. We're talking a few words maybe. So if we didn't know Esperanto, we wouldn't be able to communicate, which is just, it's just amazing to think that, you know, a little bit of work in this language made it possible for us to communicate in the first place.
Yeah. And it's, I remember someone saying that when you learn a language, you develop a new personality. And that's true for like every language. I think with Esperanto, everyone who learns it has to turn into a pacifist. It's just that way of thinking, like in order to survive in the community, you just develop that personality. So I think that's the Esperanto personality.
Right. Well, we talked about people who haven't heard about it before. I think another group we should probably talk to is the people who found out about it on Duolingo and are now madly progressing through the trees. Can you give any sort of advice or recommendations to people as to how they should go about learning it? Maybe, you know, going through Duolingo, maybe after they finished it. What's the best next step to improve their Esperanto and keep it up?
The best way, and this would probably be true of any language, is that once you complete that course, or even beforehand, take up other learning resources. That way you can get other perspectives. You'll want to start speaking it as fast as possible, because you'll never become fluent in a language if you don't actually use it. So that's how I got to where I am. I just spoke it all the time. I'd sit there speaking to my cat, to myself, to random people on the street type of thing. So you got to speak it. And there is so much Esperanto literature out there. So get into reading it, get into listening to music, watching videos online. I've noticed with a lot of Duolingo learners, they'll come to my channel, for instance, and I'll say, I didn't understand what you're saying there, but like, I've watched a few of your videos with the subtitles on. Now I know what you're saying. I'm getting used to the language. So you've got to actively use it. Listening, speaking, reading, just actively use it.
Right. And any favorite resources apart from Duolingo we can recommend to the listeners?
Well, funnily enough, I never actually learned on Duolingo, and I've only played with a bit. But I learned through the traditional method. I used the website learning.net, which is, it was before Duolingo, probably the biggest language learning website in the world for Esperanto. That's definitely a good resource. There's the forums there. There's also so many different books out there. There's various audio courses. So like I said, iTalki's got their own little Esperanto component. I haven't really got a favorite. Like, when I learned Esperanto, I was so haphazard. I'd do one thing and I'm easily distracted. So I'd do one course and I'd do maybe two parts out of it, and I'm like, I'm moving on now, and I'll do something else. Like, I was the type of guy who'd sit there trying to write Wikipedia articles in Esperanto before I could actually speak or write the language, just because that's how I like to go. So I say, do whatever feels best at the time, whatever you enjoy. Try out many different things, because you'll be surprised what you enjoy doing.
Right, and what you enjoy doing is ultimately what you'll do the most, which is ultimately going to benefit your language skills the most. So it kind of works out that way if you start with that attitude in mind.
Yeah. Definitely.
All right. So was that the cat?
Yeah, I've got a cat here. It's just randomly walked into the room.
And it's called Kato, right?
Yeah, it's a funny story. I don't know if you want to go into it, but pretty much Kato just means cat in Esperanto. It got that name because we couldn't decide on a name for it, and I just kept calling it cat in Esperanto.
I think it's hilarious, and it works. And I've heard much more ridiculous names for animals anyway, so it makes sense. And so, what are the I don't want to call it blocks or anything, but what other challenges do you think Esperanto needs to? Well, I don't know if it needs to overcome. Actually, maybe that's a loaded question. But what kind of positive developments would you like to see in Esperanto in the next 5 to 10 years?
Well, Esperanto is now in a massive growth phase. And as you're saying, probably the biggest challenges for Esperanto is the perception of the language. You'll notice if you ever go to a language learning forum, say for French, people will be asking questions about how do you use this and this and this. But if you go to an Esperanto learning group, a lot of new learners will come in and they'll be like, why isn't it done like this, this, and this? Why can't we change it to this? And the reason being is because people come in with a perception. They go, okay, Esperanto is a artificial created language. It can be changed, or it's not a real language. It hasn't got a historical backing. It hasn't got a country. So it's just the perception of the language that needs to change. And I think that's just a matter of time and people just getting used to the language. At the moment, you'll see it even in the Duolingo discussion groups. People will be like, why do you want to learn this language? But no one will ever ask you, why do you want to learn Welsh? You know what I mean? Like, and the reason they ask that question, they go, is, well, you can't make money doing this, or you can't do this in Esperanto, you can't do this in Esperanto. But if you just swap out Esperanto and you put in any other word or any other language, they won't ask that question. It's because of the perception, the whole idea that it's a created language, it's somehow different.
Right. Do you think that it will ever be like truly mainstream?
Oh, that is a loaded question. truly mainstream. Well, I very doubt during my lifetime that would happen. Like, it would become, say, a secondary language of the whole world. Like, in the Esperanto community, you've got two groups of people. You've got those who are trying to make it the secondary language of the entire world. You've got those who are generally more like me, who are just out to enjoy the language, create things in it, make friends, do whatever. Going mainstream is such a hard thing to say, because you could imagine, let's just say some famous actor, for instance, suddenly decides that he likes Esperanto, starts using it, starts talking about it and whatever. You could imagine then that a whole heap of little kids are going to run out and start learning it just to imitate him. So it could happen overnight. It might never happen. You might have, for instance, Esperanto is officially supported in China by the government, that they pay for it type of thing. They pay local groups to do radio and all that type of stuff. So imagine if several other countries just randomly decided for whatever reason that they wanted to use Esperanto. That could then create mainstream in that country, but not necessarily in the rest of the world. You've got other things where, like in, I believe it's Hungary, where just randomly, I know that in order to get into university, you need to speak a secondary language. And at the time, obviously, you had English, German, all these languages you could choose from. And the Esperantists managed to sneak in there and get Esperanto as an accepted language. And then suddenly all these people go out and learn Esperanto. And that, in a sense, kind of made it as a more of a mainstream type of language, just by them sneaking in there and doing their dodgy type of thing. So yeah, there's so many different ways it could go. I have no idea. All I know is that it's massively growing at the moment.
Right. And which is super cool. I mean, it gives more people well, they just hear about it. That's the beginning. You need to know about it before you can act on it, right? So that's the first step. What was the other thing I was thinking of? The TV and the wouldn't it be awesome if there was like a huge production of a film in Esperanto? I mean, I know you're into filmmaking and that stuff. Wouldn't that be cool, like a huge multi-million-dollar production and only in Esperanto?
Oh, that would be epic. I could imagine that being, if you're thinking multi-million dollar, I could imagine that, for instance, they did a film on the early history of Esperanto or something like that, but then subtitle it to another language, say English or something like that. Then it might sell well. Within the Esperanto community, you're not going to be able to sell a $1 million film production. And in all honesty, I love film. I've worked in film for years now, here locally as an actor. But I chose the YouTube path because of it's cheap, it's easy to do, you don't need a big production team. As you can imagine, in most spots, a lot of Esperantists, they have their small group, or some just don't even have a group, while in others they've got a bigger group. But it's very hard to organize a large-scale film production, and that's why I would steer clear of it. I organized the setup for Esperanto TV, and it's a lot of work to organize that many people to come together to make a film. But things like YouTube, even in the English world, are massive. And you get massive followings of just a guy who sits in front of a camera and just, you know, complains about something. Now, see, something like that, that's something that individuals can do. And the Esperanto movement is still, although it's quite big, it's still very individual. So there's no, like, big production houses or anything like that.
Right. But that could be coming in the future.
If the
space grows, then demand would increase for native material, because right now there's a lot of books, not so much like live either audio or video. You can find some songs and stuff, but it just seems like it's books if you want to read something, if you enjoy reading.
Yeah, the biggest is definitely books. There's a fair bit of music, but yeah, you're definitely right, and when it takes off, trust me, I'll have my fingers, my little paws in there.
Awesome. Another thing you touched on earlier was the value of, for language learning, as in learning Esperanto first gave you the confidence to learn the next language better, or at least you got the language bug. And I've read several studies that indicate that learning Esperanto before learning a foreign language, well, it is a foreign language, I guess, but another language would greatly improve the success rate of that second language. So that's also I guess a way that Esperanto could grow huge is just if schools decide to say we want our students to be more multilingual. We want our students to be better in French, be better in German, and let us teach them Esperanto for a year before they start learning their French or German or, well, I mean, it could be Chinese, Russian, depending on where you are in the world. What do you think about these for education purposes?
I think it's a brilliant idea. Like, for instance, here in Australia, when I went through school, every school did a different language, sometimes different languages each year. So you can imagine no one really learned anything. But they were quite clever when it came to music. With music, everyone had to learn the recorder first. And it's basically the Esperanto of musical instruments. It's very simple. You blow, there's a couple of holes. You can't mess it up too much. I ended up chewing the end of mine, but you can't make too much of a mistake. And that got people into the whole music idea of, okay, so this is how an instrument works. Now I can move on to the bigger ones. Esperanto is the same. Like when I learned Esperanto, like I said, I'd studied Japanese and French, but the thing is, schools here, they don't actually, I don't know if this is other countries, but in Australia, they teach you the words and stuff like that. I had no concept of grammar, which is where Esperanto was a massive help. When I started Esperanto, you're seeing all these words that end in an O sound, and then you find out that's a noun, and then you see how they all sit in a sentence, and you're like, oh, okay, so that's how it works. And then you see all these words that are got an A sound or a sound at the end of it. And they're all sitting before the nouns or after the nouns, but they're all describing the noun. And then you can see all the grammar and you start seeing verbs and then you start seeing transitive, intransitive, accusative cases, pronouns, all this type of stuff. And these are concepts I never knew before, but because Esperanto is visually simple as well as like spoken it's simple, you can see how grammar physically fits together. And then when you move on to another language, like I started studying Spanish, and I noticed that all the endings are swapping out, straight away I noticed the different endings swapping out. I'm like, what's the go there? And then I go look it up, and it's because, you know, based on who's speaking type of thing. And I'm like, well, that makes sense. It's just, you know, it's almost like a case marker, but on the verb type of thing. But if I hadn't studied Esperanto beforehand, that would have blown my mind out, you know, type of thing, because suddenly it's changing because of gender and all this type of stuff, and it just doesn't make sense. But because I've studied Esperanto, I'm able to see how these parts fit together. Another thing is, this is only true for European-based languages, but once Esperanto has a very big Latin-based etymology, like where the words come from, When I started studying Spanish or even looking at French again or any of these languages, even when I played with German a little bit, you're seeing all these words and you're like, ah, so yeah, that's like Esperanto. Okay, it looks slightly different, but now I know what it means. So it simplifies the whole process again.
Yeah, it's funny, just a random story about that. I walked down the street here in Budapest the other day, and I there was a French couple coming towards me. And when I hear foreign language, I always like, perk up my ears and I'll listen for it. But he said something like, you know, he used the verb demander. And I was like, oh, there you go. I understood that because of Esperanto. Whereas if you'd learn French, you would know, you'd see the Esperanto one and be like, oh, that's easy, I can understand that. So yeah. So it works everywhere. And if you live in Europe and you speak, let's say, English and any other language pretty much, you will see lots and lots of Esperanto words. The problem, I guess, is when you're learning Esperanto, you're not quite sure which one it is. So when you see an English word and you have to type in the Esperanto, you're like, is this the French, the German, the English, or the Russian? Where do I go from here?
But it's pretty having cool. That problem with Spanish at the moment, because like a while back I learned perdón, which is like, and it's very similar to pardon or pardono in Esperanto. And like you're trying to speak the Spanish and suddenly these Esperanto words coming out and like, oh, come on, stop messing with me type of thing. But that's a good thing with Esperanto, because all the main words are taken from every language, like as in, so for instance, the most, if one word exists in multiple languages, that's the word that Esperanto uses. So it does simplify that. Like when I was traveling for Europe, I did the same thing. I was sitting there looking at pamphlets, trying to figure out what it's saying, going, I know half those words, hopefully like reading it correctly though, because you never know, it might mean something totally different. But yeah.
Yeah, false friends might exist. I can't think of any right now, but I'm sure there are definitely words that don't mean what you think they mean, but I'm not sure if there are any like where they could get you into trouble.
Yeah, not too many that can get you into trouble. I know when I learned Hispano, I encountered a few of them. I actually did a video on false friends, which is funny enough, like controlli, which means to check, but as you can imagine from English, it sounds like to control.
Right.
So yeah, it's interesting.
But if you speak German, I think it's the same. And Danish is definitely is like to control is also to check in Danish. So there you go.
Yeah, that's just us weird English speakers.
Yeah, it's but funnily enough, what that was one of the things that I was in the army for like 2 weeks and I got sent home. But that was one of the things they told us. We could never say check. We could only say control. So there you go. You know, we don't check things. Okay. We control them, as in make sure everything is okay. We don't just look at them and be like, "Oh, that's fine." So if you said that, you get 20 push-ups.
Oh God, I would have got so many push-ups.
And the bad thing is they stopped doing individual punishment because apparently that was cruel. I don't know. I mean, I can't even begin to make sense of that. But anyway, so they said every time somebody had to be punished, they had to punish the entire squadron of like 100 people. So some fucking idiot, you know, made one speaking mistake and we're all on our knees and doing push-ups and sit-ups.
No, I totally understand that. I totally understand that. I was in the army for 6 years in Australia, so I suffered through that so much.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you did a little bit more than me, I'd say. All right, so
there's always that one person.
Yeah, well, I guess it must have helped you on a personal level. I mean, it must be a very enriching background to have.
Well, that there's a totally different discussion.
Part two, Evil Dia on army services. But anyway, I want to talk to you, rounding off here, a little bit about where you see the channel going, the Evil Deer channel, because obviously that's where we know you from and that's where we've seen you do crazy things like eating spicy peppers. And I mean, they didn't look that bad, but I guess they're kind of a special spicy thing that native to Australia.
Oh man, that was brutal. That was brutal. I totally, like, when I before I did that challenge video, I made an off comment in another video of going, "Hey, get me to this level and I'll eat," you know, and I just randomly picked chilies or peppers out of my head. And suddenly everyone started sharing that about around, and then I was forced into it. I can't back out of it now. So, and then I was stupid. I just went down the road, brought the first chilies I saw, and just, you know, that was a bad mistake. Never eat the little ones first. Right. But where's the channel going? Okay. So yeah, when I first started this, it was more just like something to do on the side, you know, to practice myself a little bit, to whinge a little bit. And because I launched it just before Duolingo, it was like the main channel, and now it's growing, obviously. And I see it as growing. Potentially, it could get really big in the future. I'm full time working at it now. Like, I do a video every day. I love doing it. It's my passion in a sense. Apart from Esperanto, so every day I want to work on it. There's something I want to do. And funnily enough, I haven't thought about today's topic, but there's always something I want to do. And it's growing so fast at the moment. I can't see it not going somewhere in the future. And just a while back, I launched my Patreon page, and I didn't expect much from that. And then suddenly I got so much support from some of my loyal followers. And I actually see it as something, you know, 5 years from now where I might even possibly be able to do it full time. So that would be like the ultimate scenario, me doing it as something that, you know, every day, like I couldn't ask for more. And just with the growth of Duolingo, with the new courses that are coming up and just that all compounding, it's the possibility is endless at the moment.
Cool. And any plans on doing any kind of like different types of content, or are you going to stick to the format of, you know, I guess you could call it video logging is probably the term that the kids use these days.
Well, the good thing is with most YouTube channels, because I'm part of the YouTube community here, they have to follow a certain topic, otherwise they lose their audience. Like if some guy's doing gaming and then decides I'm going to do vlogs, everyone's like, oh, come on, I came here for gaming, then they leave. But because there is not many other YouTube channels in Esperanto, I can make everyone suffer through whatever I want to do, because there's nothing else really to watch. So I'm all over the shop some days for like a few weeks. I'll do vlogs, then I might do gaming, then I might do, you know, instruction videos, then I might just randomly eat chilies. I can do whatever I want and people keep watching, so that's good for me. So really, direction wise, I have no idea. I think vlogging is going to be a really big part of this channel, just because it's something I enjoy doing. I'm hoping in the future that I'll be able to get out more vlog with other people, especially with the new Duolingo Esperantists when they start popping up more here in Sydney. I want to meet up with them, do some vlogs together type of thing. That's probably the main way it's going to go. I'll still do gaming every now and then and just random challenge videos.
Cool. And for Richard, any plans of coming to any Esperanto events in Europe or in other continents?
I would absolutely love to hit up the next Universal Esperanto Congress. I'm intending to go to the Indonesian Esperanto 3-LAN Congress. So there's one between Australia, Indonesia, and New Zealand happening in Indonesia. So I'm going to go there, which will, funnily enough, be my first ever real Congress. Most people assume, because I run a channel in Esperanto, I must have done a lot of Esperanto traveling, but realistically, I probably, if you put it all together, I've done maybe a week's worth of Esperanto traveling in the entire time that I've spoken Esperanto. So I'm actually looking forward to going to a big congress and really using it with a big group. It's always been me with like individual other Esperantists. So yeah, I want to hit up the Universal Esperanto Congress. Maybe if I'm not too old, the Youth Esperanto Congress, the international one. But I'm getting pretty old now. I'm starting to go bald. I don't know. I'm trying to hit up everything I can in the future, but it really depends on finances, time. You know, Australia's in the middle of nowhere down here. It's so expensive to go anywhere.
Yeah, I guess that's challenging for somebody like an Esperantist, because, you know, you want to connect with people, but having such a, I guess, an isolated position in the world is really hard or expensive to actually go meet other Esperantists.
Yeah.
But
it's also interesting because, it's also interesting because me as an Esperantist down in Australia, like the core of the Esperanto movements in like Europe, Brazil, you know, those types of countries. And I'll see these Esperantists and I'll be speaking about something in the community and I'm like behind everyone. So I have to kind of ask, okay, what's going on there? Because I don't live there, people. Give me the gossip.
Right, you need somebody else's YouTube channel to get the gossip from.
Yeah, definitely. Like I keep saying it on my YouTube channel. Guys, go launch a YouTube channel. If you want to be a YouTuber, launch it in Esperanto. There's like no competition except for me and I'm not real competition.
Well, you put out a video every day. That's pretty hard to beat, actually.
I'm surprised people actually watch them every day, to be honest.
Well, I mean, the format is nice and digestible. You know, you can just watch a few minutes. It's not a 30-minute rant on, I don't know, some kind of stuff. I guess that happens too, actually, coming to think of it. But mostly your videos aren't like super long and like that, but I guess that's why people just watch it on their phone in the bus or something.
Yeah, I guess people can tolerate about 5 to 10 minutes of me. After that, the drop off rate is just massive.
Yeah, I know that. That's like the our focus, right? The concentration. That's the limit of human focus in 2015. I don't know why I'm doing like 40-minute interviews. That's probably 8 times too long.
Yeah, probably, to be honest.
But anyway, if there's anyone still watching, which I would salute you for, or listening indeed, this is also an audio podcast, just want to thank you, Evil D, aka Richard Delamore, for coming on to the show and sharing your passion, you know, and that also goes for your video creation and everything you do for the community. I myself, not really a fan of labels, wouldn't exactly call me an Esperantist, but I do speak it and I do enjoy the sort of the community and the idealism. I like the hope, like the essential part of Esperanto, you know, the word Esperanto meaning hope, to me, that's probably the best part of it. So thank you so much for coming on, and I hope to meet you in person somewhere around the world one day.
Oh, no, I'll definitely hunt you down. I'll find you.
Well, I'm not hard to find, but if you do ever come to Europe, you know, it's very easy for me to get around. So do give me a notice there.
No, definitely, man, definitely. And any other Espanis, I'll meet up with anyone. Doesn't bother me.
Yeah, just send you a message and you'll meet anyone. That's the spirit, isn't it?
Yeah.
All right, thank you so much.
Down any dark alley. See you, mate.
Cheers.
Thank you for listening to the Actual Fluency Podcast.